Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, the musical comedy known as Congress continues to rock along. The CNN has had to admit that, in their opinion, the country is divided between one half wants to go ahead with impeachment, the other half doesn't. And what a lot of Democrats from primarily Republican states are finding out is the voters are not happy with them attempting to overturn the will of the people. We may see a lot of Democrats who have been lifelong members of Congress actually having to go out and get jobs. That would be devastating. So we'll see what comes of it. You know, we've been talking about unsolved mysteries, bizarre happenings. When I was at the Necronomicon in Santa Fe, not this past weekend, but the weekend before that, people wanted to know what I thought about the mysterious disappearances in the national parks. And I'd heard a little bit about it, but I did some research, and my God, it's an epidemic. It's just unbelievable. So we're going to do a show about that, and I'm also going to go ahead and do a book on it. Tonight, we're going to start out talking about what's been called a paranormal prison. We've talked about Alcatraz before, but there's some things that have come to light that we didn't talk about. For example, May 2nd, 1946, the Battle of Alcatraz. Six prisoners overpowered guards, stole their weapons, and tried to escape from the prison. Now, Alcatraz sits on an island in San Francisco Bay. It was turned into a prison because it was thought it'd be impossible to escape from. Well, it was closed after there was a successful escape. Now, these six inmates discovered they didn't have the key they needed to get into the recreation yard. They grew desperate, took captives, and then started shooting. Over the next 2 days, two prison officers were killed and 18 were injured. Three would-be escapees were shot to death in the utility corridor between cell blocks. The very spot that 36 years later, San Francisco radio anchor Ted Weigand was exploring with a psychic when he was overcome by a feeling of violence and evil. Through the Travel Channel, he got a tremendous feeling of anger. He felt this presence beneath him in the dirt where these three men had died. And that's only one of many supernatural stories involving the so-called rock. Now, this facility started out being a Civil War fort built to protect San Francisco Bay. Then it was a bird sanctuary and actually the birthplace of the American Indian Red Power movement. But what made the biggest impact on the atmosphere, I guess you could say, was the home for thousands of hardened convicts. Now, these were the men rejected as unmanageable by other prisons. They were called the Incorrigibles, according to former inmate Whitey Thompson. He said if he stepped on a toe, it was going to wind up being a fight to the death. Now, many of these long-departed inmates are now said to be unruly ghosts. Al Capone has been heard practicing his banjo in the shower room. He was a member of the prison band called the Rock Islanders. Mobster Alvin Creepy Carpus calls the baker in the kitchen home. George Machine Gun Kelly reportedly materialized to several people in the chapel. But clearly the most haunted spot in the prison, according to many paranormal investigators, is D Block, site of the infamous 1946 escape attempt. One prisoner was locked in cell 14D. Now, that was one of the whole cells, punishment cell. He supposedly screamed something else was in the dark with him. When the guards finally got the door open, they found him dead. Strangulation marks from a spectral attacker on his neck. But what was the most interesting thing? That evening during roll call, he showed up and answered. Well, unlike so many haunted places, Alcatraz does not commercially capitalize on its reputation. In fact, the National Park Service calls the ghost stories flights of fancy, as does the island's official tour website. According to that website, there are no authenticated cases of ghost sightings by any of Alcatraz Island's residents over the years, whether they were soldiers, prisoners, correctional officers, family members, or park rangers. But I guess it's a matter of definition. How do you authenticate a ghost sighting? Have the ghost sign an affidavit? Leon Whitey Thompson made probably the best comment. The island's haunted. It's the island of the damned. And certainly, I've heard many stories along those same lines. Well, from Alcatraz, let's go to Plainfield, Wisconsin. Now, somewhere in the Plainfield, Wisconsin cemetery lies an unmarked grave. Belongs to the man who, thanks to Hollywood, may be America's most infamous serial killer. In that same burial ground lies what remains of the women he dug up in the 1950s and turned into a perverse variety of handicrafts. Not surprisingly, the place is said to be haunted by the restless soul of one of the victims, unnamed in death as in life, seen prowling the lonely graves. Now, in November 1957, Plainfield was shaken to its core after 58-year-old Bernice Warden, owner of the local hardware store, vanished. Her son told the local sheriff he'd found blood in the store, and a 51-year-old local handyman named Ed Gein had recently come in looking for antifreeze. Well, the sheriff traced Gein to his ramshackle, isolated farmhouse. Gein had lived alone ever since his mother had died. The sheriff found Bernice Worden's body hanging by her feet, decapitated and eviscerated in a shed. I've got a caller. Let's see what the caller wants to talk about. You're on the Ken Hudnall Show.
Hey, how you doing? It's
pretty
Sid.
Good.
I called in last week. No, not much. I when I talked to you last, I was going to go on a show with a psychic, and I'm always open. You know, I'm always open, and I definitely see that there's a lot of things we don't know, you know, about the next worlds. But, you know, it didn't turn out, to be too psychic after all. You know, it was basically, she didn't really hit on anything. I just, when somebody doesn't want to really look at it and they just want you to take their word, and when I say, look, let's investigate some scientific avenues and think about it, you know, once it's kind of like psychology and logic comes into play, especially when people start, you know, their voice starts to get more stern, and, you know, I do this for a living, and, you know, hey, con artists tell me they do that for a living too, you know? So it's
course.
I guess, yeah. And to me, the reason I research it is because it really discredits factual and actual psychic experiences. You know, it makes the majority easy to dismiss it because there are so many charlatans out there. And, you know, even in that, you know, they could even receive some type of message that, you know, we don't know what's really happening, but to, you know, to kind of say that you know for sure shows me that, you know, they really don't, you know.
Well, I've had this show for 30 years. And I've interviewed hundreds of psychics, and I can count the ones that I believe actually are on two hands. One
wow.
was so accurate. We used to do psychic fairs here in El Paso, and he would show up and he would do readings, and he would have people just incensed that he would say such things. And then they'd come back and apologize and say what he said actually happened. And he became a good friend. He was a naval officer who just kind of developed what he called his gift. But if he told you something, you needed to listen. Now, some of the others couldn't have found a prediction with both hands and a flashlight.
Yeah, there's something very mysterious and mystical about things that have, you know, passed the flesh, basically. It requires a lot of investigation, and, you know, there should be. I tried to speak with a man to open up a school. You know, we had different thoughts on common sense, because I said, well, common sense, you know, a lot of people said it isn't common. But I explained that it is a common. I said it's common because that's why it's called common sense. I said what people don't have is uncommon sense. And we see that within a few of us, you know, that talk together. So I said, you know, possibly the name doesn't have a good ring, but, you know, the psychic school of uncommon sense, or, you know, something for psi research or something like that. You know, but yeah, it's still in the workings, you know, because there's nothing really like that, you know, that it's really needed.
Well, you know, you find talented people in strange areas. 50 years ago, my parents owned a motel in Florida, and a gypsy family rented one of the cottages, and I got to know their daughter, who was a strange girl. But she one afternoon took a pack of playing cards and started telling people's fortune. And to my utter shock, everything she told me that would happen to me happened. It was absolutely the strangest thing I ever came across.
Yeah, some very common people have really, really deep roots. You know, I when I found out the gypsies are like a short slang for Egyptians that were displaced from millennia ago, it brings a whole new meaning, you know, and really people don't, you know, they're really afraid too. What I noticed was when I was in Amsterdam, I tried to realize, like, why do people, you know, who take hallucinogenic mushrooms, why do some, or even LSD acid, why do some of them have what they call bad trips and some of them, and many of them don't? So the bad trips, the good ones outweigh the bad ones. And the conclusion after years of research that I came to was mushrooms, and I don't know, well, LSD to an extent, makes you look inside. It shows you things about you that you could, nobody can ever show to you because they're in you. And I wondered, with the people, you know, with the wonderful experiences that I've had, you know, are there people that, you know, maybe have committed some really bad atrocities, maybe did something that was, they knew was wrong, but they keep telling themselves it's right. The mushroom or the psychedelic experience will make you look at that. It will make you look into yourself. So everybody that I've ever encountered, you know, they, you know, I've confronted them with that. Like, you know, have you ever, you know, have a lot of men too, I would tell them, you know, have you ever pushed yourself on a woman, you know, forcibly? Because a lot of men would do commit what they call date rape or something like that and try to dismiss it away. Yeah, you know, and now when they take the mushroom puts it in their face. So, you know, I had to think of all these aspects of why, you know, scientifically, instead of just going on the, you know, the non-scientific route and just saying, oh, this is what I think. No, this is what makes logical sense. Logic is a science. Reason is, you know, for reasonable people. And that really, I think it was the show One Step Beyond, black and white television.
Oh, yeah.
They did a episode. I found it. It was a 4-part episode on psychedelic mushrooms where they took scientists, Western scientists, down to Mexico. And I forgot the lady's name. She's like the shaman, Maria something. But, you know, they said that, you know, from these tests they did and they showed, it enhances some type of telepathic ability. Especially testing, you know, when looking at certain pictures and guessing stuff. So, you know, I wonder, you know, what is it, you know, about these plants that governments are afraid of people, you know, experimenting with, that can unlock secrets?
You faded away.
Yeah, no, I was just, you know, I figured that would be a good thought because it will unlock secrets, I think, even into, one author put it as, it could be a type of technology to travel in between worlds. And, you know, I've spoken to one guy that I think it was either the mushrooms or the DMT from the ayahuasca vine where he said he thought he made contact. Other authors talk about seeing beings, you know. Dr. Rick Straussman wrote a book, DMT, the Spirit Molecule, where he spoke about, he's the only one so far sanctioned to do it, government experiments with DMT in intravenous form. You know, that's one thing. The fact that the natives know how to make it, you know, and know which plant is the MO, I think it's the MOA inhibitor. It's an enzyme in the stomach that prevents us from going on the psychedelic trip because many things have DMT. So to find that vine, you know, out of thousands or tens of thousands of trees and all of this, you know, and people think that it's a primitive culture, that knowledge may have come from something way further that was bigger and may have been destroyed. When I look at humans that live in what they call hunter-gatherer primitive societies, to me that looks like our fail-safe, you know, it's a fail-safe mechanism for humanity. If something were to happen today, the survivalists, the guys who do it right now, who live out there and they hunt deer and, you know, they live with nature, they get everything from nature in a Western way because they're using Western weapons. They know that, hey, if stuff hits the fan, we're back to that. So if it's back to that, it would make more sense to say, well, wow, all of these guys that are in tribals across the planet that we've slaughtered, they may be the survivors, the descendants of Atlantis, so-called, or descendants of whatever civilization that was, because they're living like in a state of basic survival on the land with no prior knowledge except for myth and legend about the old world. And for some reason, it seemed to have been kept in record from Sumeria to Egypt to Greece to Rome. And then it pops back up as England to become the nucleus to rule what we see today. And it seems like it's the same thing. It's something that holds the knowledge to, you know, it points toward humans seem to have been created. We're seem to be like an indoor type of creation. It led me to think maybe the Eden was a lab, was like an indoor laboratory, a biodome. And humans were created, and that, you know, over time, you know, the whole story biblically is, you know, that's like a fraction. So when you look into the faction of creators and, you know, and that's one thing religious people have a really tough time when I explain to them, like, well, if you look in the Torah, the Bible, you know, other books, it's a plural faction. It says, let us create him in our image. The New American Christian Bible says, and God created man in his image. I said that's forgery. That's fraud. You know, to change that when you can go back and other books that have been taken out, you know, that are in the Greek Orthodox Bible, the Apocrypha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when you read stuff, you know, you start to say,
when you
wow,
look at the language that was used, El was man, Elohim was plural.
Mm-hmm.
And Elohim was what was used in the phrase that you mentioned.
Yep, exactly. I had a Torah that said it in Hebrew, and then it translated into English, and it said that. It said Elohim is plural, Elohai is single. And then it had another English passage for the translation to say, yeah, they mean plural, but they didn't really mean it. And, you know, so I started to see just how mind controlled they had to keep this, because if people really started to think, they would say, wow, well, second of all, Lilith had to be, you know, that was a mistake. Well, not a mistake, but it was something that was created that so-called God or gods didn't foresee that she wouldn't obey. Then Eve is created, you know, and Adam, it's really like a breeding program. It's like an experiment that kind of went wrong. And, you know, the same science that I see intelligent designers use to totally crush and destroy scientifically the religion of evolution, that they will not use, you know, on their own religion. Because I'll tell them, look, well, why don't you use that same scientific method to find out what was omitted? What did we lose from Spanish to English, to Greek to Spanish, from Greek to German, you know, all the way back to Latin and then Hebrew and then the translations? I said, there's a lot there, you know. And that's when, you know, the unscientific. And I start to realize, wow, this is just to try to control people. There's just two factions. It's two sides of a coin called control. One side is religion, the other side is evolution, which in a sense is a religion as well. So either hand go to run into, yeah, they have you, you know, instead of thinking for yourself.
I did a book that I haven't brought out yet called Mystery Men. And it's about folks who showed up to teach advanced topics to primitive people that just seemed to appear out of nowhere. and then they disappear after they did their teaching, which raises a number of interesting questions. Where did they come from? And where did they go? I mean, look at the Sumerians that you mentioned. Oannes walked out of the ocean and taught them the skills of civilization. But every night went back into the ocean. Now, we talking about a talking fish or somebody in scuba gear?
Yep, very possible.
Nobody's ever heard that.
Or I thought possibly it could be a type of human that maybe could be classified as a Homo aquatics. You know, I thought about that with the Ones, and those half fishmen gods are seen in Greek and Roman and many other cultures as well. So you're right. It makes both make sense. It says, yes, could it be scuba gear? Part of me thought maybe the Lab of Eden is the underwater lab. When you look at humans, a lady wrote a book, I think it was in the 60s, called The Aquatic Ape. She thought that there was a missing link from aquatics because we resemble water mammals more. We have the film of blubber around us. We're hairless. Our hair flows with water when we swim it. I wouldn't say, you know, because she's still part of the religion of evolution. I would say it's more like, yeah, we might have a commonality. We definitely have a commonality with water mammals and mammals on the whole. But, you know, the evolution, the religion is created to throw us off, to say, yeah, and it goes back. Everything goes back to a blacksmith. And then a chimp with a rock. And it just, the more I study, you know, the further the mystery gets. So anybody who really studies science would say, yeah, evolution, whatever, sounds okay, maybe plausible. But once you start to really study science, origins get further away. You start to see everything is much more complex than you ever thought it to be.
Perfection. There we go. Well, there have been so many theories put forth. And, of course, everybody's got a theory. Some of them stranger than others. But the bottom line is, I think civilization's been destroyed many times and built itself back up. They discovered an Iron Age, I talked about it last night, an Iron Age settlement in England. Not Iron Age, Bronze Age. And the technology found there was far more advanced than anybody ever thought it could be.
Yeah, they're afraid. What I thought was they're afraid. It seems to be like scientifically it points toward if you realize that Egypt and Sumer had technology and also just a lot of skills that that we can trace to what we have today, it destroys their model because they tried to use ancient Greece as the base for civilization, which any ancient culture we look at is the antithesis of civilization. If you have murder and, you know, that's not civil, you know. So we are in the 1984 newspeak, doublespeak, George Orwell, / Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, you know, because we're controlled by
well,
fear.
Of course. It's getting worse.
Yeah, yeah. And
what
pleasure.
We're seeing
so
out of
it's
Washington
a mixture.
Is doublespeak like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, yeah. And instead of pure Orwell, which would be the fear, they mix in the Huxley, which is ruling by pleasure, because that's the comfortable slavery. That's the people saying, yeah, I'm scared, but I'm comfortable. You know, but, you know, and it's such a – the natives said it best. They said when the bear and the snake and the danger is killed off, you become less aware, and that's what we've bred. You look at the average human, they're afraid of you know, a mouse. They're, you know, they're becoming more and more like vegetalized. You know, I don't even know what the word is. Like, I call it zombified, because you try to talk to somebody, you know, about meaningful, and if something were to happen, cataclysm like, it would go right back to the hunter gatherer. But to keep,
well, this, you would have 70% of the society just freeze, and 30%.
Oh yeah, they would go dawn of the. Yeah, it'd be dawn of the day.
Head for the bushes. But 70% would wind up just falling where they stood.
Yeah, they would turn into a zombie movie. And the guys heading into the bush, they would also be met by the people already in the bush, because there's tons of people who understand, you know, if you don't have a well, you know, not only a place, but a well-guarded place, you know, because people are going to come and they're going to be desperate. I mean, I tell people, look at how people fight over material items on Black Friday. And just imagine how they're going to act for food. It's Soylent Green.
I saw, back when I used to venture out on Black Friday, I saw two women just square off and start pounding each other over a TV set.
Wow.
And while they were fighting and rolling in the floor, somebody else picked up the TV and walked off with it.
It's amazing how, you know, to look and see how we can easily be controlled like that. And, you know, part of that, religious people will jump on the wagon and say, oh, yeah, yeah, I do see the seven deadly sins, which, you know, there may be more. But that is a template. You know, if you can look at that and say, yeah, what they're doing is has a lot to do with their envy, their greed, you know, those you look at, you know, what gluttony gets people. Fooled by gluttony. America is you look at people here and you travel over to Europe and you'll see people that actually care about themselves, and you come, and not to say that everybody in Europe cares about themselves, but you will see a more of a health conscious society, as opposed to over here where it's, you know, you really see people not care. They'll look for a scientific cure to what a certain type of chemical food is doing to them, like processed sugar giving them diabetes. They'll look for a cure for that instead of removing the cause of the problem, because sugar is another, you know, control mechanism. It's how one scientific researcher, he made a point. He said, if you stop sugar, sugar, coffee, and tobacco, he said that stops the working world. He said that will stop it. It'll cripple it. There's people that cannot work. They will go into such withdrawal and add coffee into that. So sugar, coffee, tobacco, and then you add in all the other ones, the other little comforts, dairy, you know, on top of that. People will sell, you know, for lack of a better word, their soul for that. To say every day, you know, and I watch them. It's so sad. I've interviewed many people, and they've told
me
that.
But keep in mind, there's a lot of people that's what they've grown up with, and they see no reason to change it.
It's a good recognition to know why we're here. We, you know, that's a very big part. Parents, family. They know that they can break that open. You know, control is easy, because, you know, you'll be fighting yourself for the rest of your life. So it's easy for someone else to step in and, you know, say, hey, come this way.
Well, unfortunately, the problem is nothing's going to change it. And they'll fight you tooth and nail if you try to change it.
Yeah. That's the zombie analogy that I've been working on. Because it's like, there's a point, and I'm not sure where, that they are beyond bringing back. Very, very similar to zombie movies. there could be an antidote. And the antidote may come in the form of something we can say to them, like a magical word that will, you know, or not magical, but a phrase that has so much reason to it, it actually penetrates the zombified mind. Or tragedy. You know, tragedy sometimes can snap a person out of something they were in. But yeah, you're right. They will fight. They will die trying to assimilate you back into the herd or any one of us. Yeah, they will.
Mm-hmm. And that's
and the saddest part.
I think the worst part, because you know, even as it's like when the band was playing as the Titanic was sinking. I wouldn't have been sitting there playing. I'd have been finding some way off the damn boat. But instead, it's looked at as somehow brave. Like Nero fiddled as Rome burned.
Yep. Yep. That's what it is. It's that guy who is trained to kill and die for a gold star. The same mentality. You know, I used to think that when you look at and study World War II or something like that, and you wonder, you try to say and tell the people, what, don't you think these soldiers would rather be enjoying the French Riviera? But no, they're mentally controlled to throw their lives into the pit. I mean, that really, when I think about it, because I'm a military former soldier, and, you know, I look at that and I say, wow. You know, this is like serious because there is something that controls men like puppets. And yeah. A few of us see through it. You know, I think what saved me was even when I was younger, I was rebellious. So, you know, I wasn't the soldier that said, hey, this is my MOS. I'm not supposed to be a grunt. I was like, wow, heavy artillery is amazing. You know, and, that I think men in there appreciated to say, okay, if it hits the fan, we know men like that. We don't want the guys to complain and say, I joined for college. You know what you joined. You joined the gang of killers.
Of course.
And if if a person's too ignorant for that, then they're just going to have a rude awakening. And I think even today, that is possibly part of the reason for the high, you know, 20 something veterans a day suicide rate, you know, because men haven't accepted that. It's hard to accept that for guys who are not that, you know, which rightfully so, you know, they could say, well, I never killed anybody or, you know, but then in a way they know, well, you know, I was part of that gang, you know, I was part of that group. And the thinking man, you know, he has to come to the resolution, you know, to realize like, hey, there's nothing wrong with defending yourself, but there is something wrong with what happened. And, you know, nobody's perfect, you know, that's a big part of healing. And, you know, to see nothing here for these guys, I think in a way they want them to kind of rot away and die away, because if they were straight thinking, the older they get, and the smarter and more intelligent, the more dangerous that becomes for this so-called, you know, I call it the kind of like it's a dictatorship disguised as a democracy, which, you know, even like the socialism, they all lead to down the same road, totalitarianism. You know, it's just, it's crazy. You know, you really don't find, you are truly like one of the few people that, you know, akin to the zombie movie analogy, one of the survivors that, you know, when you meet the person, you say, wow, another person that actually thinks.
Well, sometimes the, when you realize that you're not being told the full story, it can be a tad disconcerting. I mean, I asked one of the colonels that was wanting me to go do something I thought was kind of odd. I said, has anybody talked to these people? Well, that's not for us to discuss. We're just supposed to go out and do what we're supposed to do. I said, it'd be a lot less fatiguing if we just tried to talk with them. They may not want to do it either. Well, if everybody thought that, then the system would fall apart. And he was right. And he also realized I was just pulling his chain, but you got to get your amusement where you can.
I remember a Vietnam vet who was so mentally distraught. He mentioned that he had killed a family in a house, like a household, an entire household. And, you know, it makes me wonder. It's like, it's an amazing mind control, the power of it, you know, to have somebody do something that's so immoral without being threatened. You know, they become the threat on the person that's just existing. You know, those things, it makes me see that, okay, maybe existence here on what we call Earth, you know, which is weird that they call it the planet, you know, it's like it's planned, you know, the world, you know, you spinning your world.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be a type of teaching, you know, to say, let's see if this person is going to actually learn, you know, because until it's the definition of compassion, until we can put ourselves in the position of the person that's being, you know, that's getting the treatment that we're dishing out, how can we be compassionate? You know, so therefore, you know, understanding those definitions can let us, at least, you know, knowledge is power. It leads you to freedom to say, wow, am I being compassionate? You know, am I, you know, would I like that done to me? And you know you wouldn't. It's like, you know, you would want relations or something like that. And that's how you mm-hmm. know right from wrong. So nobody can tell me that, oh, well, how do you know it's right? You know right from wrong. Everybody knows right from wrong. So, you know, once you start to have these tools, nobody can BS you. Nobody. You can look into it and say, wow, this person, I don't know what they got to go through, but, you know, maybe they need to repeat the grade, you know, and I don't want to, like, play into reincarnation too much or anything like that, but, you know, possibly.
Certainly. A lot of what we're told is quite obviously not true. But figuring out what part of it is not true is the game, if you will. And he who plays the game the best wins. If there is a winner.
Yeah. That's. I'm glad you capped it off with that, because I thought to myself, you know, what if it's not a win game? What if it's learning? You know, there's no win. You know, it's like now you know. You know, which is actually more powerful. Yeah, to say, wow. You know, it makes me wonder. You know, to say, okay, we don't know. You know, that's the most honest evaluation. We don't know. And anybody saying they do, you got to suspect them for mental control, you know, zombie, or they're trying to control you, bring you to their cult. So we don't know. And we're trying to figure stuff out. History, of course, his story, the direct stemming of the word, is not the same as accounts from the past, you know, an actual account of the past event is different from his story. Finding a bone in the ground, that's an account of past events. it's 300 million years old or it belongs to this, that's his story. You know, it's real easy to separate science theory from fact, but people, the zombie machine makes like 100 people say, no, those are the same. That's why evolution is a fact. No, this animal turned into this animal. No, that's a fairy tale. You found this skeleton in this depth of Earth in this medium. That's science. That's a past account. And if you have the date, that would also have to be corroborated. You know, you'd have to look through a lot of stuff to say, okay, well, one thing we know, we found it in the dirt in this depth roughly around this period.
Yeah.
Everything else goes back to we don't know.
Everything else
so
is
must,
position.
Yeah. Because if you look at it in the technical world, none of that ever comes up. It's, hey, does it fly? Does it work? Does the fuel work? You know, it's all about results. And that's one way to use as a path, like a headlights, to get through. You know, to say, okay, I know that almost everything is lied to me. How can I figure out? How can I use logic and reason to figure out, to say, okay, who's still in a state of mind control? Because the worst ones are the people who think truly, genuinely that they're right. And they can never be right. I tell them, I say, just saying that knows shows that you don't know what right is. What's right is right. You know, so if, you know, the sun rises at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm not right. That happens. You see, so we put it on each other so we can say, oh, that's just your opinion. You know, it's like, no. This find was found in this dirt. That's it. Oh, you're right. No, I'm not right. It was found in this dirt. You know, you don't have to, you know, put it on the person or something very wise. And then they'll say, yeah, so-and-so said that. Who cares? That's why they used to put anonymous. But then people started saying, who's anonymous? It's like, we just told you a wise message, and you're trying to focus on the signature at the bottom of the page instead of comprehending the message that was on the page. And a group of scholars, they argued with me over that, saying, oh, he has a different way of looking at things. He doesn't like to accredit the people who, wrote the saying. You know, and I just, there was nothing I could say because I realized that now these scholars become akin to the four characters in The Wizard of Oz going on the yellow brick road to Oz, which is the college with their degrees, you know.
Well, I've got 5 degrees, and that and 50 cents will get me a cup of coffee.
At least you're honest, you know. I mean, and it's not to say people with degrees, you know, that's a technical skill. You know, you definitely have a thing, you know, you have credentials in that. But especially today, I mean, it is just, it's such a business. College is so scandalous. It's amazing.
Well, some of the so-called brilliant professors turned out to be dumb as bricks. They had never been outside the walls of the university, so they had really no real world experience to go with their degrees. And one without the other is not that great.
Yeah. A real smart man, I forgot who it is, he said, school is the advertising agency that makes you want society just the way it is.
It's indoctrination.
Yeah. Well, indoctrination, and also it is, you know, it is, it's like an advertising agency, because by the time you come out of there, you're so programmed and yes, indoctrinated with their whole branding. You know, there's a school, I think, up in Minnesota or something around there. It's like it's in a mall. You know, it's like a mall combination high school. And it literally, you know, you would think, you know, it's a joke or something. But this is the level the society has dropped to. It's a joke. It's and it always was. Frank Zappa was right. It's always been the brick curtain. The army has always been there, right behind you. You know, it's always been there. Full-blown military occupation all the way back to Sumeria and probably, you know, before that. Because when I look at the Sumerian reliefs, you know, I have pictures of a lot of them with the so-called Anunnaki with the wings and then the guys without the wings. It is very military. They have what's on them that looks like a military watch. You know, military watch from the 1890s and the right at the turn of the century there had 12 little teardrop shapes that, you know, the point of the teardrop met the middle of the watch. So that framework over the glass of the watch would preventing from breaking a lot more than just without it. And that's exactly what their wrist bands look like, you know. And I have, you know, pictures. I put them on social media and stuff. And, you know, so all the way back to there, you know, all the way back to that and probably before.
Yeah, there's nothing new in the world. And that's what so many people don't. But the more I dig into the topics that I write about, the more I discover what we believe is not the truth.
Yeah. The word belief is a mental disease, I think. I've been looking at that word, trust, love. Love can be, you know, explained more in the word care. You know, and still love requires defining and looking into, but belief is seemingly more and more a mental disease. You know, it's a thinking over believing. It kind of frees you. I wrote a phrase that says, belief suspends thinking. Thinking suspends belief. But once, if we don't know that, we're still caught into thinking belief, and thinking is very similar. Well, I believe it. No, you think, because some people will use the word belief when they're actually thinking, and it would say, no, you're not believing. That's a fact, you know. And the belief, that is dangerous. Belief is dangerous. It's like if you believe something, that's how you get the guy to kill somebody that, you know, that isn't doing anybody any harm, or to do something wrong. You know, you can't, if you have a moral society, you can't rule it. Because I thought about that. I said, everybody has to be immoral. Because if not, then you would have a utopia. And the logical reality of us not having a utopia shows us that everything, it has to be corrupt. Because if it wasn't, we'd have the utopia. You know, so the logical reasoning, the fallacies, show us mathematically that we're in we've always been a state of corruption. You know, you can't get somebody to, you know, take somebody's land and, you know, kill them off and this and do all that without belief. Because if they thought, if they think, they're going to say no. And this is why a lot of people joined with the natives and of all continents. Even, you know, when you look at the Russian revolutions and stuff like that. And that's, you know, I think that's the maybe more of the lesson of existence than the physical, you know, I'm working towards some type of military goal for somebody that I don't even know. You know, which is what the world seems to be under, you know. And, you know, it's just, it's looking at things in that way. And, you know, it's scary. It's sad because we're taught to be scared. You know, well, what if this happened? It's so much fearful stuff. Authority.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, Terrence, who was it? Tim Leary, I think it was, or Terrence McKenna too, but Tim Leary really said it would. You know, I used to wonder, never respect authority in any way, shape, or form. Military, you're taught to respect authority. So, you know, but, you know, there is a point where you don't, you know, you can't blindly follow orders. But also, you wonder, you know, so how is authority an illusion? You know, where Leary is, you know, talking about that. And this is, you know, a professor of a university. So, you know, that's like coming from the top. You know, that's like General Smedley, I think, from the Marines, who's, you know, one of the most decorated military, you know, to come out and tell you, look, this is a racket, man. You know, so at that point, the fail-safe mechanism to keep the zombie hordes going, like, you know, the poor people in the movie Gangs of New York and just killing the rich people, that mechanism, that fail-safe, is belief. I think Napoleon said, belief, religion, keeps the poor from killing the rich.
Well, he's right. Because there's so many more of them than there are of the rich.
But also, like in the Gangs in New York, they said, if, you know, it really gets bad, we can always pay one half of the poor to kill off the other half.
Well, that's true,
and
too.
Yeah. It's
There are a lot of very strange-thinking people out there.
Yeah. I mean, what is it? Every 5 miles of highway, you got a federal law requires one straight mile. You know, any rebellion, you got to be able to get aircraft to that area. You know, kind of like Rome. The reason the saying was all roads lead to Rome was because Rome built the road to your town when they invaded it. And any rebellion, they needed a road to get there in time to crush the rebellion, because the longer it takes to get there, the more of a stronghold the rebellion will get, you know. So that all roads lead to Rome, and, you know, we look at over here and it just it is Rome.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time again, but I appreciate you calling. We have the most interesting discussions.
Yes, thank you. I really do. I appreciate them.
I'll be back tomorrow night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, this is Ken Hudnall. You're listening to the Ken Hudnall Show. This Saturday, I'll be at the Women's Club of El Paso. They have their annual book fair. And in spite of rumors that I'm dead, I'm very much alive and still writing books. So, till tomorrow night at 6 p.m., this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.